systems of justice in Utah and America. One for rich, white, connected people. One for those not rich, not white, and not connected. My name is Jim DeBacchus. I'm on the left.
We found a way to get Jim off of the bear's ears. And we talk about the Republican convention. This is Dan McKay on the right.
I hope Donald Trump plagiarizes my mock acceptance speech. This is Natalie Gochner and both sides of the aisle. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the Political Center, and I am joined in the studio today on the political right by Representative Dan McKay.
Hey, good morning, Natalie.
And on the political left, back from Mexico, Jim DeBacchus.
Okay, so I got to read this. I got to read this tweet. This is Mrs. Trump. These accusations about my speech not only hurt me, but they also hurt my children, Sasha and Malia.
That's pretty good.
Hello.
Right. Is that a great segue into our subject?
Yeah, okay. We are going to talk about the convention. But I do want to acknowledge to our listening audience that we are joined in the studio today by Cooper McKay. Dan's wonderful son. He's wearing a BYU shirt. I like that, Dan. Nice touch.
Well, you know.
BYU doesn't get in this studio too often.
Agency is really painful for me, and this is just one implement of it.
But I will say that we are outgunning because we've got a University of Utah Professor Chambliss in the studio as well. And, of course, I'll claim the U as my loyalty. So
we got it all because you got the U.
Got the U. We got
I
the
got
y.
the Aggies, and he's got BYU. So, Jim, where are you?
Jim's a BYU guy.
Let's not talk about it.
All right.
I love BYU.
This is political high season. You know, we've got the Republican convention going on. And let's just break this down and start first by chatting about Donald Trump's pick of Indiana Governor Mike Pence as the VP running mate. I was not guessing that.
I don't know that anybody was.
They're saying it was an arranged marriage.
I think if you go back to the tape last week and 2 weeks ago, I said it's going to be Mike Pence.
He's always saying that.
We're going to insert the tape in.
The word on the street is an arranged marriage to help with the evangelical vote and to, you know, juxtapose him with such a reasonable guy. But I really thought we were going to get Chris Christie or Newt Gingrich.
I did, too. And I wouldn't have been surprised if Ben Carson was also on that list, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Not that Ben Carson would have, you know, necessarily represented your reasonable qualification. But at the end of the day, I thought those names who had already been in the race, been tested somewhat, Mike Pence was definitely a surprise. But I got to be honest, I don't think it's a bad pick.
Yeah, good pick. But I have a prediction.
Interesting.
And that is that he doesn't last. I know. Oh, you guys are looking at me like that was really out there.
Well, it was kind of bold. He doesn't last till November?
There is so much static to come, so much confusion to come, complexity in this relationship that Pence may not be able to go the distance.
Wait, describe
distance? To November or through the whole term?
No,
he's going to quit is what you're saying.
Oh. Yeah. Wow. That's just a thought. To me, the pairing with Donald Trump is just so difficult.
And it's so forced.
Yeah. And so, like, if it would have been Chris Christie, that would have been the worst scenario for me because I think it would have been such scorched earth and divisive and negative and mean-spirited that from the political middle, that was the hardest one for me to stomach.
Interesting.
We're going to have fun when we get to talk about Hillary's pick real soon.
I was going to say, Jim, since we're backing up the show 2 weeks ago and we'll know that Mike Pence was the Republican, so let's just back up the tape now. Who is going to be the Hillary nominee?
So the easy pick is that
Booker. I don't like the guy.
No, I don't think he's on the list.
I'd
like to see her pick one of the Castro brothers, not Fidel.
I'm with you.
I think they would add some energy, the next generation. They would add a lot of cool stuff. But I think she's going to pick that dullard from Virginia. I think he adds nothing to the ticket.
Okay. Do you want to do anything on roll back the tape, Dan,
no.
in terms of who you would pick?
Cory
Booker is who I had thought it was going to be, but I like the Castro idea.
Yeah, I could see that being it'd be a strong, safe pick.
Yeah.
Okay. Right?
So We're at the convention this week. All sorts of interesting things are happening. Mike Lee has played a role here. And I don't know, Dan, if you can break it down better or Jim. I'm probably not the one. But as I understand it, he's a Cruz supporter and has sort of been on the front lines of trying to cause a little disruption and, you know, make the Cruz point.
If everyone will remember back to the pre-Romney convention issues, there was a push about the rules and what the rules should say, because honestly, the rules govern the convention and the chair is bound by those rules. Like, for example, here in Utah, you know, if you're at the state level and you get 60% at convention and nobody has the signatures, you then bypass the primary, right?
Yeah. So and apparently, if you're doing a standing vote, you're going to get in the trouble.
And so what they got into is this whole they got into is this whole rules fight. And Mike was Senator Lee was making a big issue out of, look, these rules merit some conversation. And they were trying to force the conversation. Having a roll call vote would open it up for a floor debate on those rules. And that was the big issue that they were trying to push.
Yeah.
And they were saying, look, there's too much power vested in the chairman in these rules. And we need to review these rules and say, hey, we need to fix some things. Now, that being said, it was quite ridiculous to see my U.S. senator screaming from the floor. I kind of wish that he just had some people doing that and not
did it look kind of weird. I didn't see it.
It did. Yeah. And he was actually there on the floor and CNN was interviewing him. And because he was a U.S. senator, it was a bigger issue.
Yeah.
And so they were kind of going after Mike. But I just thought it looked a little weird.
Jim, tell me your take on here. You have Senator Lee playing that visible of a role. And then you have our former Congresswoman Enid Waldholtz, Green, however you do it. This is pretty amazing to have two Utahns in that primary of a role, given the size of our state.
I don't think Lee had a primary role at all. He's just a candidate down there. And I had a...
Do you agree with that? I thought he was sort of the front man for Cruz doing this.
He was.
Yeah.
So that's a primary role.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They're buds, because nobody else in the Senate can stomach either one of them.
Yeah.
And so the story is you walk in the Senate dining room, and either Mike Lee or Ted Cruz are eating alone or they're eating with each other. And so he's picked on, that is, Donald Trump has picked on Robin there for Mike Lee's Batman. But I want to say, while we're talking about it, she has been completely diminished because that people say, well, she's transgender, therefore nobody should look at her. It's out of the question. That was just some kind of a crazy symbol.
Enid Mickelson-Green is?
If you meet with Misty Snow.
Oh, you're okay. Sorry. Thank you. You made the transition for me. I was getting worried about
where I was going. You know, Mike Lee was a lobbyist in Washington for many, many years before he ran. He spent a year back here working for the governor. But most of the time from law school, he's just another D.C. cog, despite what he says. Misty Snow worked at the Taylorsville Harmons for 14 years. She does. She's a cashier. She never once missed a house payment, I'd like to bring up. She didn't cost the government $23 billion. Her father wasn't famous and opened up a lot of doors of privilege to her. As a matter of fact, she was in foster care. She's smart. She's honest. She's hardworking. And she understands the real life of Utahns. I'm telling you, if Utah really wanted to send a message, rather than take this rehashed lobbyist political ideologue, they would take that cashier from the Taylorsville Harmons, and they would send her to Washington because she's smart.
This message is approved by
Misty Snow. I know,
Dan,
is Jim not clever or what? Because I'm trying to talk about the prominence of Utahns at the Republican National Convention, and he gives us this beautiful, eloquent description of Mike Lee's opponent.
And by the way, a great fair and balanced approach to this whole issue, I guess.
Yeah, pretty balanced.
Well,
from a Fox point of view.
In our next segment, we're going to talk about Melania Trump's speech and get into that a little bit. But is there anything more to be said about this convention, how you're feeling? I'll just say from the political middle, it's really painful for me. I'm hurting inside. Yeah, because, you know, like the Tuesday theme was, you know, getting America back to work, and the economy actually is doing pretty darn well. And it's like they're ignoring a lot of data, you know, as they make all these claims about Obama. And the Make America Safe Again, I appreciate a lot of it, but there's so much division in it. You know, Blue Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, and which side are you
all
on?
All lives matter, yeah.
Yeah, I just – it doesn't feel good to me.
Yeah.
You know, this is not Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
This is not Morning in America. This is the apocalypse Mel Gibson America that we all better get in our bunkers.
He doesn't get to finish on this. We're coming back to this issue.
We'll come back to it. In our next segment, some more about the convention. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle.
This is Jim Nabakas, proudly on the left.
And Dan McKay, equally proudly divided on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and I take the best ideas from both sides of the aisle and make things happen in this state. How's that sound, guys?
That was pretty shameless. I gotta be honest.
Yeah, I was as bad as Misty Snowplug.
The problem is I'm not an elected official, so I can't do anything like you guys can.
Do I get a shameless plug also in this whole thing? Because I'm looking for something. I'll find an opportunity.
Well, do this for us. Tell us what's to like about the Republican National Committee's convention this week. Is it got some sing to it for you? I mean,
so I'm
when I see
it.
Donald Trump in the mist and we are the champions, I'm just like,
how about this?
This doesn't work for me.
I will say this. I hear that more people are actually watching parts of the convention than have watched in the past.
Interesting. That's going to be interesting
so
to see how.
This is a totally new deal. And everybody, I think, because it's like everybody's waiting for the car accident, right?
Yeah.
And they're looking for the wreck. And if there's no wreck and they get this many viewers, it will be a slingshot for Donald Trump post-convention.
I want to juxtapose it. And, Jim, tell us your thinking here. But when George W. Bush ran, and this was the Compassionate Conservative Convention, I'm sitting down there in my basement folding laundry, watching the convention. And one by one, my heart just started to beat as one with what was being said. And it really spoke to me. It's not happening for me this year.
No, look, people win the presidency by creating a greater vision for America, mm-hmm. not by kicking the other people in the head. And I'm not the candidate that is going to be able to kick. There is a kicking time in an election process. It's not now. The convention should be uplifting. They should be inspiring. They should be take us the next level. And I'm not sure Hillary can do it.
Yeah.
But so far, Donald Trump hasn't done it. I mean, when he provides Scott Baio from Happy Days as the big speaker, and I feel really sorry for Donald Trump's wife. I mean, this is just bad staff.
What do you guys make of this? and I'm sure, just to set it up for our listening audience, I mean, there's been the YouTube videos that show, you know, Mrs. Obama,
side
Mrs. Trump,
side.
And do it. And then there's been the radio where they just kind of play them one by one. But it's either really, really bad, lazy staff work, or there's a mole for the Clinton campaign.
Well, that sounds like Fox. There must be a mole.
Well, but Jim, at that level, you know, like when it's a national convention and it's the nominee's wife, and it's not more.
You're saying
nobody
could be that stupid.
That's right. I can't explain it.
I believe that they're
that
stupid.
It makes more sense to me that the Clinton machine made something happen.
Interesting. I love that became the hubbub when you've got a potential crook government secret distributor, right, on one side of the ticket, and you've got a misogynist potential racist on the other side of the ticket, and everybody's making this big issue out of plagiarism in a speech. And it just shows you the tenor of these conversations. Everybody's nit-natting at every little thing. Mm-hmm. And it's sad because we'll have another week of it with the Democratic National Convention next week.
I just wish it had happened to the Donald instead of his wife, because she
seems
to
like
be a really
class
nice
act
woman.
Of the family.
She does.
You know what? And I'm just glad
Ivanka's
that
Ivanka's pretty amazing, too, though. As far as classy ladies, I'm just saying she's right there with them. So is Don Jr. I don't know.
Melania, how do you say her name?
Melania.
She made Michelle Obama's convention speech great again, you know? And so there is some good. Goodness to this whole thing.
Well, good. Hey, there's some other news. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on the convention?
Yeah.
Neither of you are going. You're not going to the DNC one either, Jim?
Nope.
Yeah. So, okay.
I thought you were. You're an alt.
I'm not going. I don't.
Why?
Because I just think parties are dumb.
It's a circus.
Yeah.
But some
circuses. I went once. I love it. It's a great experience. Everybody should go once in a lifetime, but that's it.
Well, your party sent out this thing earlier in the week, an email blast, complaining that Mia Love wasn't even willing to go to the convention. You know, where is Mia Love and these whole things? And I just, you know, think it's somewhat ironic that
former party chair and current senator is not going to be there.
Yeah, not interested in going either. So
I'm not going.
I just, you know, there are reasons not to go to these conventions, and they may be legitimate.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, let's jump to something that deserves some attention, and that is the likely dismissal of the Mark Shurtleff case and problems there. Wow.
You can back up the tape to 2 years ago.
Okay. Okay. We're going to do a back of the tape. What did you say? What do you remember saying?
I have told people that, you know, I long have felt that Shurtleff would be scot-free and that Swallow would be the one that's busted in the whole scenario. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is Shurtleff is more crafty.
Okay. Having said that, I just have to say, and Jim, I so want to hear your voice on this, but how on earth do you go this far down a path and defame someone like Mark Shurtleff and then not press charges? You know, so for me, I'm sort of like, well, his life and his professional career has been so damaged, and you did this, and you're not going to press charges and get that? It troubles me.
Yeah.
It's funny that it troubles you that the charges weren't pressed.
Well,
a jury deserve to hear what's there. But I'm going to tell you.
Does that make sense to you, Jim? I'm just sort of like, if you brought it this far, how did you get this far? Because, as far as I'm concerned, he'd been in the court of opinion, he'd been damned.
The Davis County prosecutor does not deserve bad words. Mm-hmm. The United States attorney for Utah looked at this for 2 years, and they have refused to turn over all of their evidence to the local prosecutor. And one says, why? Mm-hmm. The Davis County Commission said no money. You cannot have any additional
money.
Mm-hmm. The Attorney General sent a preposterously small token amount. As somebody who's been involved in sometimes big lawsuits, Troy, whatever, I've never met him, but he had no budget. Everywhere he was cut off from doing the prosecution. There simply wasn't enough money.
When Speaker Lockhart led the charge here to do the right thing, she did not let money get in the way.
Yeah.
How could it be getting in the way now after you've defamed someone?
Because nobody would supply it. Davis County refused to pay. The state of Utah gave a grand total
Of $50,000.
The United States attorney has refused to turn over the documents on the prosecution. He is standing there all by himself with this investigation with $50,000. The current attorney general, Sean Reyes, said, that's all I'm giving you.
Dan?
There is no ability to prosecute that kind of case. And one other thing before we go, Dan, and that is the Supreme Court plays into this. Because the Supreme Court, a couple of weeks ago, dismissed charges of bribery against the Virginia governor, who received Rolex watches, who received use of a Porsche, who received his daughter's or his son's wedding paid for by people that were doing business with the state. What the Supreme Court said is, elected officials, you can take a Rolex watch from somebody who has a contract with the government unless the state can show that there is a direct link between you getting that Rolex watch and your action on a specific contract. You have done nothing wrong. So the Supreme Court sets such a low bar that unless you do a contract, and who knows, Shurtleff may have, that says, I am taking this money as a bribe to do this and this and this, the Supreme Court has made it possible for you out there who are driving your cars around to send me every kind of gift you can imagine, and I'm going to be just fine.
Dan, give us your commentary. Where does the buck stop here?
Boy, you know, elected officials have got to support prosecution. If you are going to actually say that public trust matters, mm-hmm. you've got to make sure that in these detailed, difficult, forensic type of investigations, you can't give up on them because you got a courtroom full of DUIs you're prosecuting. Mm-hmm. And that's really what the counties are looking at when they're trying to make some of these decisions. And I realize they're focusing on, you know, the things that keep them busy, that kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And this really wasn't necessarily their fight, so you can kind of point the finger at the state. But I look at it and say, how much of this Sim Gill hasn't released or hasn't released, and he was here last week and probably couldn't talk about it, but he hasn't released Swallow. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at the same pool of evidence. And Sim's initial response thus far has been, I'm not planning to get rid of the charges. And so something's different between Davis County and Salt Lake County mm-hmm. and the ability for them to prosecute. And the resources that Jim mentions is certainly one of the issues. But you know what? In these public wrong cases, you have got to get the water to the end of the row and make sure the public understands. Yeah. Otherwise, the corruption of public trust that was lost in the whole process
right
and
back.
It being exposed, it's still there.
Yeah.
Just one quick.
It might even be worse.
It may be worse.
Yeah, because now the legal, you know, the legislative branch maybe let us decide. Now it's the
if
legal.
If you're a Latino or a Hispanic or a minority and you're sitting on the west side of the Salt Lake Valley, you see the truth. And what do you see? You see two justice systems, one for rich white people who are connected, and you see another one for yourself when you've got some legal defendant who's got 80 cases. This is a rotting, corrupt criminal justice system, and it is very, very, very bad for America.
Very tough. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Dan McKay on the right and Jim DeBacchus on the left. Before we go to gripes, let's talk for a minute about the very tragic police shootings in our country and the division, the Black Lives Matter movement, the Blue Lives Matter movement. My husband said to me the other day, this feels like Vietnam, just the division in the country.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And just, you know, because we can kind of go there. We're a little young for that. But the point would be...
That's not a good reference of time, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, yeah. The point would be, ouch, this is a hard time in the world and in our country.
Yeah. When you see the ability to enforce the laws that have been put in place undermined by the public's lack of trust, there's going to be problems, right?
Yeah.
And this whole... It kind of blends into the last issue, which is we, Jim, and you're part of this, we, the government... may not be serving necessarily the needs of the people, and I think there are legitimate issues that we can be tackling in ways to look at this, but it's going to require some radical self-evaluation of the government. I think.
Yeah, well, the government has to start like compromising, you know, having respect for someone else's opinion and saying, okay, I'll meet you halfway.
Yeah, well, and you know, our law enforcement, and we've spoken so well of them in the past, and I don't want to take away from that, but they do get defensive. It is possible to attack one officer's actions without going after the entire community.
Oh, good heavens.
It is possible.
It's so awful.
And so when they get so defensive, it erodes that public trust a little bit more,
yeah.
I think.
Jim, my son, serving an LDS mission in Mexico, comes home in 3 weeks. I finally started to write about his return home. And, you know, I said, I want to share some perspectives. Perspective on the family, perspective on what's going on right now. Because he's been in a bubble. And I found myself sending a very sobering message. You know, about what he's returning home to. And it's ISIS, you know, it's the Brexit, it's the Donald Trump thing, and now it's this police thing. I mean, it's a tough... You have... I love your perspective, Jim. Tell us your quick thoughts.
I just...
Do you agree that it's a grave kind of tough time?
I think it's overdone the extent that I think there have always been these kind of problems. But this instantaneous view of everything... And this terrific ability of these, normally a cable television station is somewhere where the big ones are getting 1,300,000 viewers. But when one of these shooting happens, it spikes up dramatically. And they go from a few $1,000s for a spot to very large amounts of money. So right after that shooting in Dallas, they already had drama in Dallas and the creepy music.
Yeah, it's instantaneous.
And they take all of these issues and... amplify them. So, yes, there are these
problems.
So
we all walk around depressed.
We do.
Yeah, that could be a gripe.
And that's why, you know, I will save it for my gripe. You just gave me a good idea.
Let's do it. Right. Jim, you're on.
You know, the mother of all problems in America.
I thought it was going to be the mother of all gripes, Dan. What is he going to say?
Gets down to campaign finance reform. Mm. You know, virtually everything is decided by the people with the big paychecks. On every level of government, it is a catastrophe, and it means the people are more and more and more out of the loop, and the lobbyists and the people with the cash are more and more in the loop. That is the great looming catastrophe of America.
Very interesting. Good. Let's hear your gripe, yeah. Man.
You know, it's a beautiful day outside. The sky is blue and the weather is phenomenal, candidly. And aside from a few, you know, of our other little issues, if it wasn't for actually paying attention, we'd be pretty happy people. And what I would argue is I kind of miss a little bit those days of being super uninformed. Yeah. I know that sounds terrible.
Yeah. Because right? could just go golf and just enjoy when I, yeah. the
When
the
I
birds.
Lived in a bubble in law school, I was away from those events and it was
yeah.
okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. My gripe, I wrote a column this week about the acceptance speech that Donald Trump should give. And I just wanted to highlight what I put in there. I want him to apologize. You can imagine to whom. I want him to release his tax returns. So in the speech, he committed to that. I want him to quit tweeting because he's incapable of doing it in a civil way. And I want him to assemble a team of rivals and put all these good Republican talented conservatives around him. I hope he plagiarizes my writer. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. The program's produced by Ross Chambliss, Dan McKay, Jim DeBacchus, Natalie Gochner. Thanks for listening.